welcome to this week's edition of the Health and Wellness Podcast for the Jerusalem Post. I'm Mayan Hoffman, Head of Strategy and our Senior Health Analyst, and I'm here with
Rossella Tercatin, Health and Archaeology Reporter at the Jerusalem Post. So Mayan, today we have pretty interesting and exciting news about the so-called Israeli vaccine, right?
Yeah, it's actually very exciting. You know, we got an exclusive report for the Jerusalem Post, access to information that has actually been submitted to the New England Journal of Medicine, a study that was done by the Biological Institute in Nes Ziona. They were the ones who created the BreLife vaccine, the Israeli vaccine, and they have been testing in their lab whether or not the vaccine is effective against the different variants. And they were able to surmise that the vaccine is equally effective against all four existing major variants of concern, from the Wuhan through the Delta variants, in the lab. They've written this up as a correspondence to the journal, and they're waiting to get it accepted. I spoke yesterday to the CEO of NRX, the company that has purchased the rights to market and to move forward with the vaccine. They're getting ready for their large phase 2-3 registration study in Georgia, the country Georgia, and they're also going to do some of that here, but it's looking very positive that the vaccine will be both longer lasting, which is very important as we see the Pfizer vaccine waning, and also potentially more effective against the various variants.
This is really interesting, really important. Can you maybe remind us why, we have this Pfizer vaccine, we have such a good relation with the company. Why is this vaccine different? Why is it promising? If Pfizer works, why would we need another one?
100%. I mean, well, first of all, the Pfizer vaccine works, but we see that it works short term. We've already gotten three shots of the Pfizer vaccine. It's unclear, but it is looking like the vaccine is starting to wane in some of the inside. We're getting some preliminary data from some of the antibody tests that are being done, for example, at Sheba Medical Center. And what we're starting to see is that the vaccine is likely waning again sometime between, let's say, 6 months and a year. You're definitely going to need another shot. And it is possible that we won't need that with this vaccine. Now, the vaccines are different. The mRNA vaccine is a new vaccine. The technology's been around for 10 years. They're definitely or likely not unsafe in any way. This is not harming anybody to take the vaccine, and we want to be very clear about that. And it saved probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives, you know, if not more, worldwide. But the vaccine that we're talking about, the BreLife vaccine, is different. The BreLife vaccine is actually built as a vector-based vaccine, and it takes the VSV virus, which is a being genetically engineered. It's a virus that is not unsafe to humans in any way, and it sort of dresses it like a sheep, I guess, a sheep in wolf's clothing, as they say. You know, you've got this unharmful virus being dressed up in the spike protein of the COVID virus, and it's being inserted, you know, into the person, and then antibodies are being created. But because it's an actual live spike protein, the virus seems to react differently and also seems to be able to iterate, meaning that you're able essentially to develop a more robust immunological response that's more flexible. And therefore, unlike with the Pfizer, where we're thinking we might need, you know, an updated version of the mRNA to deal with the different variants, or we saw, for example, not only did the vaccine wane with Pfizer, but also its effectiveness against the Delta variants, went down in its effectiveness. And so here you might not see those problems. This is something we knew was likely the case already months ago, but this new laboratory test is proving that what they thought would be the case is the case.
That's really amazing. And also I understand that some people might be more willing to take a vaccine that is not mRNA based because it's so new, the technology is so new, but a more traditional technology. And maybe this would also allow us to expand not only us, maybe the world, to expand vaccine coverage.
There are three advantages to this vaccine, and the number one is what you just said, that it is not a new type of vaccine. In fact, it's more similar, for example, to the polio vaccine, which I want to remind offers lifetime immunity. So if this vaccine will work, and again, we're still, you know, getting ready for phase 2-3 trials, this isn't an approved vaccine, but assuming that it would be approved, this could offer much longer term immunity. With that also, what you have is, even in Israel, 700,000 people who have not vaccinated. And among them, there are at least a large percentage who are actually interested in taking a vaccine. They're not against vaccines. They vaccinate with other vaccines. They don't want to take the mRNA vaccine. And what I understand from Dr. Javitt, the CEO of NRX, is that many of them have asked to sign up for the phase 2-3 registration trial that will be here in Israel. So we might be able to get more of the population vaccinated if this goes through. In addition to that, I'm assuming that would apply worldwide. But beyond that, the vaccine does not require any refrigeration. So on unlike Pfizer and Moderna, this vaccine could go to Africa and to some of the underserved countries. Again, we're testing it in Georgia, where they have not had a lot of vaccine uptake or access to vaccines, and that could be huge. I don't know if it'll be less expensive. That's not clear, but it will certainly be easier to distribute. And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, when we talk about just Israel and the high tech world and us being able to become, you know, to expand in the biotech industry, one of the things that's been talked about is establishing a plant here in Israel. And if we could, for Israel, have manufacturing in the country, that would help us if there were ever, God forbid, another pandemic, we would have a way to produce our own vaccines and not be reliant on a company outside who was very nice this time. I mean, we had Pfizer sign on with us and we had a great deal, but that might not happen in the future.
Absolutely. So speaking of vaccine coverage and speaking of people waning immunity, we are seeing some kind of worrying situations going on in the world and especially in Europe.
Yeah, what's happening with that?
Yeah, so basically, you know, in Europe, vaccine, the immunity given by vaccine for people vaccinated is waning. Who would have thought, right? After what happened in Israel. And we're seeing in some major countries that there's a surge in cases. In certain countries, especially those with the lower vaccine coverage, there's a spike also in hospitalizations and deaths. And so we are talking, In Israel, authorities are starting to talk again about maybe labeling some countries as red and so putting them effectively under travel ban.
And what countries are those in Europe? Do you have any idea which ones we're talking about?
Well, we are definitely talking about, you know, Austria, the Netherlands, several countries in Eastern Europe. Let's remind our listeners that, you know, for example, Austria decided this very original measure, if one, that they had just started imposing a lockdown on people who are not vaccinated because their vaccine coverage is very, very low, some 65%. And so they said this is not acceptable. You are not vaccinated. You're just allowed to exit your home if you're going to work, buy groceries or doing some life essential things, and that's it. So that's something that is happening. But let's also remember that according to the traffic light system for nations that Israel has, some countries like Russia and the UK are already orange. And we're talking about countries where we have very important people, very important traveling numbers between the two.
And so, and we just opened up tourism.
And we just opened up tourism 2 weeks ago. Let's remember that as of now, all people who are considered vaccinated, according to Israel standards, can enter the country, can travel back and forth, but not if they've been in a red country in the previous 2 weeks. So this, if countries are labeled as red, this effectively bans foreign nationals from traveling and from coming, but also Israeli citizens cannot travel to the country unless they receive a special permission from a governmental committee, and if they come back, they have to quarantine even if they're vaccinated.
Wow, what that really is showing us, you know, is how we're just not over with this virus. You know, even as we see the cases go down and the serious patients go down and we feel very good and open here in the country, all around the world, the virus is raging. You know, Bennett has said, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has said that too. But, you know, you look around and you realize, but we're lucky, we've vaccinated. But when you haven't vaccinated, when you haven't received your boosters, the virus is there and nobody is safe till everybody is safe, as the World Health Organization has said.
Yeah. But speaking of the World Health Organization, you know, it could be that their firm opposition to boosters has been influenced. My impression is that has been influenced the government's position in Europe, that have been very, very hesitant in promoting the boosters in spite of clear data from Israel and partially also from the United States.
For sure. That's a very scary phenomenon. And, you know, just, you know, I have this idea that we've seen it, you know, before, kind of we go in waves. We had the first wave, the second wave, the third wave, the fourth wave. And it's, we want to say there won't be a fifth wave, but even with vaccinating children, you know, just this week, we got full approval on vaccines for children 5 to 11 here in the country. They've vaccinated about 1 million children in America. It's awesome. But even with that, it's likely that we're going to see at least minimal outbreaks, you know, if not major outbreaks in Israel and around the world, until at some point we have created some semblance of, I don't know if you want to call it herd immunity, but immunity, mass immunity from vaccination or infection worldwide.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I don't know. So let's maybe move on from Corona, because I feel like we spend so much time talking about Corona. It is the biggest health news. But there's also something that happened this week, which is World Diabetes Day, which was on Sunday.
Right. And we know that, unfortunately, diabetes is a condition that is just spiking around the world and in Israel, right, Mayan?
Yeah, I mean, and specifically type 2 diabetes, of course, which is often diet and lifestyle-induced diabetes. We see a lot more obesity, of course, in the United States, in all Western countries. And as such, you know, more and more diabetes. Here in Israel, they are predicting 1 million cases, people with diabetes, by the 2040. But in general, I mean, diabetes around the world is going up. So if you look and you look at the data, even going back, let's say, to the 1980s, in the 1980s, you had about 108 million people with diabetes. And by 2017, you had 451 million. And what we're looking at is 578 million by 2030. That's an over 10% increase, of course. And 700 million people by 2045, again, worldwide. That's huge numbers. There are treatments for diabetes, but a lot of them are a combination of lifestyle and medicine. What was really exciting was that this week we announced a very large 72 million shekel, I think it is, maybe dollar, I hope I'm getting that right, program. You know, here in the country, $75 million, I think, right, effort. To prevent, treat, and cure the disease. And it's specifically targeting the periphery, which is in the Galilee, which is an area that's very diverse, Muslims, Jews, Druze, you know, living together, a lot of poor socioeconomically disadvantaged families, which tend to be disproportionately diagnosed with the disease.
Right. So we have to remember that it might be a little counterintuitive, but it reminds me that a few weeks ago when the Israeli authorities were discussing introducing a tax on soft drinks, the comment of M.K. Aryeh Deri, a former minister in many governments, was like, because people in the periphery, they're going to be targeting people in the periphery or who enjoy their Coke on Shabbat, as opposed to the elites in the cities who just drink very, very water or tea. And, you know, it's interesting because we know that actually people from low socioeconomic status actually do consume a lot of sugar and their diet is not the best. So it makes sense. So what can tell us a little more? What is this project? How do they plan to target diabetes?
100%. So they're starting in 5 different towns or some municipalities, where a couple of them are Arab municipalities, some Jewish municipalities. And what they're working on is actually integrating the hospitals, the health funds, the municipalities, nonprofit organizations to work together from stage one. So stage one, as you said, is lifestyle changes. Do people have access to healthy food? You know, it's one thing to say don't drink soda. It's another thing to make fresh water available. It's one thing to say exercise. It's another thing to have a walking path or a very, you know, a reasonably priced gym. And so these are things that they're going to be working on the one hand. The other thing that they're going to be doing is working on treatment. You know, what are the kinds of treatments? How do you get access to treatment? With diabetes, a lot of it has to do with consistency in treatment. So, you know, are you getting your blood sugar checked at the right time? Are you taking your medication? Are you doing, you know, the things that you need to be doing to help keep the diabetes in check? And then when we talk about cure, of course, there's, you know, this is through Bar-Ilan University, has the Azrieli Medical School in Svats, that was started about 10 years ago. The first part, you know, was really just establishing the school, trying to bring more professionals, healthier lifestyle to the Galil. But now they're really taking action in doing that, you know, in reality, on the ground. And this project is enabling them to really get into the community. And they're going to be looking for quote-unquote cures based on the demographics of the population. So one of the things they can do, for example, is look if there is something in the genes of different parts of the population that lead you to be more prone to developing diabetes. That's one of the things they're going to be doing, trying to, you know, work with precision or targeted medicine. So it's pretty exciting. And after those first 3 to 4 years of the project, it's a 10-year project, they're going to expand to additional cities.
That's great. And it's, you know, it's very interesting because since Nitzan Horowitz became health minister, in June, he has really repeatedly said that access to healthcare in the periphery of the country is one of his top priorities, whether it is corona, whether it is diabetes, we see that he has been talking a lot about it. Do you think he's actually going to make a change?
Look, you know, whether or not the country will actually make a change is always to be determined, because we know how our government has tended to function. But I will say that within the state budget that, of course, just passed, you know, about a week ago, we do see that there is more funds allocated for health. It's interesting, given the allocation, it's focused not only on staff, it's focused on building, you know, certain hospitals in areas like in Arab community, but also you have this whole idea of healthcare in the periphery and mental health care being integrated with physical health care, which up till now has been harder to access. And these kind of things give people more of an opportunity to succeed from a health perspective. Will it come to fruition? I think if the government stays intact, the government, you know, is a very diverse government. They have a lot of social issues that they're trying to deal with, which is sort of what brings them together in certain ways, but they have a lot that brings them apart. And it's unclear whether or not we're going to continue, you know, when the rotation happens with Yair Lapid coming from foreign minister into prime minister, or whether or not we're going to have some kind of change and a right-wing government is going to come in. Historically, right-wing governments, I mean, at least if we look back in the last 10 years, the health system was starving. They did not invest in security, invested maybe in building, you know, different things, but we did not invest in certain fundamental human rights, I would say, within the country, or social rights within the country, did not cater to the disadvantaged. Nitzan Horowitz, remember, is merits. He's very into social issues, has been talking about it. His first visit as health ministry was to a psychiatric hospital. So, hard to say. What do you think? I mean, you know.
Yeah, listen, as you said, you never know. I do think that there's, I do want to think that there is a power even in highlighting issues. Like it does, I think it does have the potential to affect the agenda and to affect how people think about things. And so I you know, there's hope. Better to talk about these issues than not to talk about them as a first step. But as you said, we'll see how the government continues to function and who comes after and where is the money and so on and so forth. And actually, speaking about bringing up certain issues and try to tackle them, mental health has been another thing that Horowitz has been talking about a lot. As you mentioned, his first act, his first visit as health minister was to a psychiatric ward. We don't want to go back too much with corona, but corona has also affected a lot mental health of people around the country, around the world. So where are we right now with the problem of tackling mental health and mental health, we were saying, also in the workplace after such crazy period.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, you know, what's going on. I mean, we've always had, in recent years, there's been a spike in people suffering from mental health issues. Even before corona, about 1 in 5 people, it was understood, would experience, you know, mental health at some point during their lifetime or at any given point. And there's certainly issues with mental health, you know, in the workplace and how that impacts people's ability to do their jobs. You know, you can think about if somebody has anxiety and now they have to go to a meeting, interact with people, make a presentation, how that could be difficult. Or if someone suffers from depression, maybe they don't want to have any conversations at all. Now, one of the things that happened in COVID is people really went home, you know, were able to work from home. And some of these things actually got easier for people who struggle with mental health issues. If you're depressed and you don't want to get up in the morning, you know, or get dressed in the morning, and now you can sort of work in your pajamas, but still get your job done, that might feel safer and easier. And so that, in that capacity, in that sense, what we are seeing now as people are going back to work is that some of the people who really, you know, had an advantage, and mainly people struggling with mental health issues, were able to, are not wanting to go back to the workplace and deal with the struggles again. You know, a couple weeks ago, or last week, I'm not sure, maybe 2 weeks ago, I wrote a piece that was focused on what they're calling the Great Resignation in the United States. But here in Israel, we're also seeing it, that people are saying, you know, I'm not so interested in going back to that old lifestyle. I don't want to work in a workplace that doesn't have good benefits and a good and good mental health. It's not good for my mental health. I want to be freer. They're starting businesses of their own. They're going back to school, or they're just sort of living on the savings. Because remember, a lot of lockdowns, you didn't spend as much. And so you have some savings and you can wait a little while to go back to work. So we are seeing that happen here in Israel. The number of open jobs is growing monthly. And they're not, the number of people to fill them is not growing. In certain fields, like for example, software engineers, there's a huge deficit already where there's less than one person to fill every job opening for a software engineer. On the flip side, waitresses, people in the entertainment industry, the food industry, bad jobs, not so easy to do, very grueling, on your feet, not high pay. These people are saying, you know what? I don't want it anymore. So I'm going to do something different. And they're seeing that they're not able to fill those roles. So that is becoming a problem as well. And now in terms of like what we can do in the workplace, other than trying to be more flexible with, let's say, hybrid work, allowing people to work 2 days a week from home, 2 days a week from the office, 1 day a week from, you know, wherever they want, things like that. I mean, that can help. But also, you know, they're finding that providing some mental health support, check-ins, the way that the boss relates to you, these are all things that in an era where people do not want to stay in their jobs are hugely important. And, you know, this is something that Corona might have brought it to the forefront. Again, mental health issues existed before COVID. Certainly anxiety, depression, things like that raised during the course of the pandemic. They're finding that's going down. It's not necessarily at levels higher than before, but people's willingness to talk about it and unwillingness to deal with it in their day-to-day is becoming more and more.
And this is very good. And at the end of the day, since, you know, if the economy is stupid, if this time is about employer being incentivized to do something about it, because otherwise they can't find workers, maybe it's going to really bring a real change.
Right. Maybe we'll see a real change. People, you know, they say they're going to, you know, they raise the minimum wage here in Israel already. They say that people's salaries are going up. Now there's advantages and disadvantages to that, because of course you can, this can lead to inflation, prices go up, you know, so we don't want to celebrate that too much. But at the same time, you know, yeah, people might actually be able to have better conditions when they go to work. And that's good for everybody.
Absolutely. Okay, I think for this week, this is what we have.
Yeah, I think this has been a lot of fun, Rosella, actually, today.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a great week.